Hi, everyone. Welcome to the CDH Conversations podcast. I am Aldrin Lewis, a senior associate in CDH's pro bono and human rights practice based in our Johannesburg office, and I will be your host today. In this episode, we're exploring what it means to live without a country, essentially to be invisible in the eyes of the law. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest, Palesa Maloisani from Lawyers for Human Rights. Palesa is an attorney who works with people affected by statelessness, and I'm really glad to have her here today to shed light on this important topic. Welcome, Palesa, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
To give our listeners some context, statelessness is essentially about not being recognized as a citizen by any country. We'll be discussing what that really means for a person's daily life. Think about all the things you need an official ID or citizenship for. Going to school, seeing a doctor, getting a job, opening a bank account, even just proving who you are. If you don't have a nationality, accessing these basic rights and services can become incredibly difficult or even impossible. This is why this issue is so urgent. Lacking citizenship isn't just a legal technicality. It affects real people's access to education, healthcare, and security. And in our conversation today, we're going to pay special attention to how women and children experience statelessness. So let's dive in. Palesa, maybe we could start with the basics. The term statelessness might be new to some of our listeners. Could you explain what it means to be stateless?
Sure. So in general, the effects of statelessness, which I think you've touched on quite briefly, can be severe because of the ways it adversely influences a person's ability to access basic human rights and to really just participate fully in the economic, social, and political life of the country that they live in and often consider home. Nationality is often seen as an entry point to access other rights, and it's been often described as the right to have rights. And that's because without a nationality, a stateless person is then vulnerable to exploitation and discrimination, and they can't exercise their rights to healthcare, education, freedom of movement, or to work or to vote. And so you can imagine that a life just doing these daily tasks and opening a bank account, even just signing a lease agreement, can prove to be quite impossible for a stateless person. So you can imagine how statelessness inherently results in a life of exclusion and marginalization. And I think most importantly, a life without dignity because they're unable to access documentation. So to answer your question, what exactly is it? Now, we find the definition of statelessness within the United Nations Convention relating to the status of stateless persons. And it states that a stateless person is someone who is not considered as a national by any state under the operation of its law. So while some people can be born stateless, other people can become stateless. And some stateless people may be migrants, but in some scenarios, stateless people have never even crossed a border and are stateless within their own country. And this is known as in situ statelessness. I think a very important distinction to highlight here when we're assessing or determining stateless persons is determining between those that are stateless and those that are at risk of statelessness. Now, at risk of statelessness refers to individuals who are not yet stateless, but face a high likelihood of becoming so. And that's owing to factors like a lack of documentation or discrimination in nationality laws that may exist. While a stateless person is someone who is not recognized at all as a citizen by any country. So individuals can be considered at risk of statelessness if they lack the necessary documentation or face circumstances that may make it difficult to prove their nationality link with the state. So it's very important to understand that being undocumented isn't synonymous with statelessness, right? But being unable to prove your legal identity and your nationality due to a lack of documentation can place an individual at risk of statelessness. So essentially, you're seen as a foreigner everywhere and a citizen nowhere. And finally, the most important distinction within South Africa is that the scope of statelessness is really unknown within our country because we don't have an established statelessness determination mechanism to capture the relevant data that we would need. But we have a legal framework for statelessness and on issues of nationality. And we see that through the UN Convention of Stateless Persons, the Constitution, as well as the Births and Deaths Registration Act and South African Citizenship Act. So statelessness can occur for several reasons, right? And this can be in conflict or any gaps in nationality laws that may exist. And within this focal point, a lot of common loopholes that we see is that we have no provision for foundlings, no explicit provision that centers around them. There's no provision for a stateless child and no safeguards against statelessness and procedures that have the loss or withdrawal or revocation of nationality. When it comes to statelessness and birth registration, we find a lot of common barriers within the universal birth registration practice. And that is actually both within policy and within practice. Statelessness can also occur because of gender discrimination and a country's laws that give the ability to pass nationality to a child or the ability to register a child within both parents. And we also see it within the arbitrary deprivation of citizenship that often happens. And this happens within administrative practices that can sometimes be adopted within member states that can result in deprivation of citizenship for affected persons. I think we saw this more prominently in SA through the practice of ID blocking. So a lot of the myths and misconceptions that I think need to be tackled around statelessness is that, firstly, statelessness is not the same thing as having no documents at all. Statelessness also isn't only a migration or a refugee issue, right? Most people can be stateless even within their own country. And it's not about whether you are necessarily seen as a national by any state institution. It needs to be determined by a competent authority. So in South Africa, this would be the Department of Home Affairs. And I think most importantly that statelessness isn't just about the letter of the law, but rather how the law is in fact applied in practice. If I were to go into a case study that we've had that I think speaks to the administrative barriers and obstacles that a lot of clients have and stateless persons are affected by, we have a case study. I'm going to anonymize her name. Let's go by Pam, who had been struggling to have her South African citizenship recognized and to obtain documentation for well over a decade. Her late mother had endured the same ordeal and persisted tirelessly to get registered until her mother's passing in 2023. Now, Pam's South African heritage traced all the way back to her grandmother, who had moved to Zimbabwe in the 1950s after marrying a Zimbabwean citizen. The family had then relocated to South Africa in the late 90s when Pam was still a child. Now, Pam's challenges had begun in around 2008 when she couldn't get an ID during a documentation drive that was done by the Department of Home Affairs at her school. And so she discovered that her situation was more complicated because her mother was undocumented too. So she was unable to matriculate. And so Pam had started to work as a domestic worker to support herself as well as her daughters. Now, she'd done repeated attempts to get assistance from the Department of Home Affairs and had even presented their case to the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs in 2021. And for many years, despite providing DNA evidence of her South African citizenship, she had faced persistent demands for additional evidence. A lot of unfulfilled promises by DHA officials and many hostile encounters with some. And the DHA had essentially refused to process her registration until she had submitted a Zimbabwean birth certificate, which is a document she does not possess because she had never been registered in Zimbabwe. And so this lack of documentation had impacted every facet of her life. She couldn't complete her education. She couldn't register her own children. She had struggled to access healthcare, and she essentially just could not move around freely within her own country, within South Africa, which she had grown up and lived in her whole life. Thankfully, this year, and through a court case and court order, She has finally obtained her ID. But most importantly, Pam's struggle for recognition over the many, many years, again, just underscores this urgent need that we have, or that we need, for efficient and very empathetic administrative practices to be adopted within the Department of Home Affairs.
Thank you, Palesa. I think we can agree that Pam's story is a powerful example of how statelessness isn't just a legal status. It affects every aspect of a person's life. And the fact that it took a court case to resolve shows how challenging dealing with a system can be. The Department of Home Affairs, which is supposed to help people establish their identity, often ends up being a huge hurdle due to bureaucratic delays or mismanagement. So, hearing this, I'm struck by how deeply statelessness is intertwined with other issues like bureaucracy and even prejudice. So let's talk about that. One thing I've learned is that statelessness often has a gender dimension. And from a gender perspective, some of the challenges women face regarding nationality, for example, Palesa, you mentioned this earlier, is that in some countries, law themselves are gender discriminatory. And around the world, there are still countries where women do not have the same rights as men to pass on their citizenship. Now, here in South Africa, our constitution forbids discrimination based on gender, but that doesn't mean women don't face unique barriers. And even though the law is meant to apply equally to everyone, in practice, women, particularly single mothers with those who don't have their own identification, often face far greater obstacles. What we see is a cycle that keeps repeating itself. A woman who is undocumented struggles to access healthcare or education. And when she gives birth, the hospital may refuse to issue a proof of birth because she doesn't have valid papers. And without that proof of birth, she can't register her child's birth. And as a result, the child also grows up undocumented. So the mother's lack of documentation effectively passes down to her child, trapping both in the same system of invisibility. Now, these are not explicit legal barriers. No law says that women or their children should be excluded, but the way the system operates creates indirect barriers that fall hardest on women. It becomes a cycle of exclusion that is almost impossible to break without intervention, because the very documents needed to access rights are the ones denied at the start of the process. And we just heard this with Pam's story. So when we look at the lived realities of stateless people, it's clear that gender can shape how statelessness is experienced. Statelessness doesn't affect everyone in the same way. For some, it compounds existing vulnerabilities. For instance, women and girls without legal status often face heightened risks of gender-based violence or exploitation. And without documentation, it becomes almost impossible to seek protection or report abuse. Imagine trying to leave an abusive situation when you have no ID, no proof of nationality, and no legal standing to access a shelter or even social services. Statelessness can make people, particularly women, more vulnerable to abuse and exploitation. Without papers, many fear approaching the police to report domestic violence, worried that they might be detained or deported rather than protected. And this lack of legal status can trap women in dangerous circumstances, especially when abusers exploit their situation by saying things like, if you report me, you'll be arrested because you have no ID. The effects extend beyond the home. Stateless women often struggle to find lawful employment and are pushed into the informal sector where they have no labor protections and face exploitation or extremely low wages. These are not isolated hardships. Statelessness tends to amplify existing gender inequalities. While stateless men may face many of the same barriers, women often carry additional burdens, caring for children without being able to secure resources for them, or facing cultural and institutional biases that make it harder to travel, work, or make independent decisions. In other words, statelessness doesn't just result from discrimination, it also perpetuates it. It deepens inequality and makes it even harder for affected women to break free from that status. When a mother is stateless, her children often inherit that status, creating an intergenerational cycle of exclusion and vulnerability. It's not only a human rights issue, but also a profound issue of justice. Now, South Africa at least in principle, has strong commitments to gender equality and to the protection of children. Our constitution is among the most progressive in the world. It guarantees equality before the law and explicitly recognizes every child's right to a name and nationality from birth. So on paper, no one in South Africa should be stateless, and certainly not because of their gender or the circumstances of their birth. The challenge lies in ensuring that these legal protections are implemented effectively in practice. And this is something that I think you, Palesa, touched on earlier. It requires awareness, proactive measures, and sensitivity from officials who interact with vulnerable populations. When these safeguards aren't applied, people continue to fall through the cracks despite the strength of the legal framework. And while good laws are essential, they only make a difference when they're put into practice. And so this brings us to the next part of the conversation. Children, who are often the most affected and the least able to change their own circumstances. We've touched on children a bit already, but I want to dive deeper. Palesa, what is life like for a stateless child? And how does lacking citizenship affect a child's right and daily life?
Sure. So if we're to understand statelessness within the South African context, I think we should start at looking at how stateless children in South Africa typically fall into a couple of categories. Firstly, you can have children of undocumented migrants or refugees. And these are children that are born in South Africa to parents who are themselves undocumented or that are from countries with complex citizenship laws that don't grant citizenship by descent. We then also have children who are in limbo due to administrative gaps. Now, this can include children who are born to South African parents who then fail to register the birth within 30 days, leading to a very complex late registration of birth process. Alongside that, we can also have children of parents whose own citizenship may be unclear. And this can be from the result of a legacy of historical migration and apartheid era policies. Thirdly, we have children at risk of statelessness due to gendered laws, for example. So if a child was born to a South African father and a non-South African mother, or where parents are unmarried and the father doesn't timelessly acknowledge paternity, it can sometimes face significant hurdles in acquiring citizenship. And again, through these administrative practices that sneak up. And then foundlings and orphan children. These are abandoned children whose parents can't be identified. Now, in South Africa, Section 2.2 of the South African Citizenship Act does aim at preventing statelessness by granting citizenship to children born in the country who are otherwise stateless and whose births are registered. And this provision is essentially designed to protect children from statelessness by granting them South African citizenship if they are born in the country and are not citizens of any other country, and having their birth being registered in South Africa. So you can imagine how crucial birth registration and an identity document becomes for children, because it is used to prove your identity and provide your information, and the impact that it can have on specific rights. Statelessness, specifically with children, has an impact on their access to education. Stateless children may be turned away. They may be forced to pay unaffordable school fees as quote-unquote foreign students, and severely limits their future prospects as well. And in practice, we've seen that while we have the legal right that is there, in that, in theory, no child can be denied admission because they lack a birth certificate. But in practice, a lot of schools are under-resourced and may be reluctant to enroll a child without documentation. It affects their access to healthcare. Now, while a lot of primary healthcare clinics are supposed to provide services to all and access more specialized care, it can be a lot more difficult for children without documentation. And their vulnerability in crises is increased, because if we see in health crises like the COVID pandemic, access to testing or treatment and later vaccination was often tied to an ID number, for example, leaving a lot of stateless individuals dangerously exposed. If we're looking at children's access to social services, and I think this is where their impact is most direct and severe, the child support grant, for example, is a critical grant and is a lifeline for millions of children, and it's near impossible to access without a birth certificate. And a lot of stateless children become automatically excluded from this, deepening a lot of household poverty and food insecurity. And I think most importantly and finally is their vulnerability to exploitation. Their lack of legal identity makes stateless children highly vulnerable to trafficking and child labor and forced marriage. And because they are essentially ghosts within the machine, they can't easily seek protection from authorities. And so we've seen, while we have a lot of the provisions and protections within our law, there's been a lot of implementation challenges and a lot of cases that demonstrate the difficulties that exist in ensuring that children are able to access citizenship. We see this within birth registration, in wanting parents to hold valid documentation, where a child's right to birth registration is often made contingent on a parent's documentation status. Now, we've had high court rulings on this, where it was stated that the Births and Deaths Registration Act regulations were unconstitutional and ordered that parents should be able to submit documentation where it is available. But again, we see within the practices at home affairs that this is often ignored. Another big contributor towards this is a lot of the backlog and unreasonable delays that exist in processing late registration of births. A big contributor to statelessness for children as well, and an implementation gap that exists, is within Section 2.2, which is supposed to be the protective provision, right, against childhood statelessness. Now, the Department of Home Affairs hasn't published regulations that prescribe the administrative process for these type of applications. And again, we haven't established a statelessness determination mechanism that would determine each child's eligibility to be determined as stateless. And again, we've had a high court ruling on this where it was stated that it's not in the best interests of a child to remain stateless indefinitely. And so the Department of Home Affairs was ordered to publish regulations by March 2018, which we're still waiting confirmation on. So when we couple these barriers with a lot of the implementation challenges that we see, it becomes very apparent how grave the impact on rights on children this issue has. And so assisting children that are deemed stateless is challenging, and it does require the creative use of a lot of tools. I would say that it requires a combination of international customary law, our human rights law and its principles, as well as our constitutional law, and as well as looking at citizenship and immigration law and administrative law to find a resolution for a lot of these child issues.
Thank you, Palesa, for that. It's heartbreaking to hear how an administrative process like birth registration can shape a child's entire life path. The difficulties faced by children that you mentioned, I think we can all agree, are things that no child should have to worry about. One phrase that keeps coming to mind is the right to belong. That's what this really boils down to, isn't it? We've been talking about laws and documents, but at the heart of it is a very human need, the need to belong somewhere. The right to belong is about more than just a passport or an ID number. It's about dignity, identity, and a sense of security. It's about being able to say that I am seen and I have a place where I'm recognized. When we call someone born invisible, it underscores how denying a person nationality can make them feel like they don't count. So ensuring the right to belong means making sure no one has to feel that way, that no one is invisible. To our listeners, I hope this conversation has been eye-opening. I encourage you to stay informed and engaged on this issue. Statelessness might not be a word you've heard often before, but now you know why it matters. Let's continue the conversation about statelessness, about gender and children's rights, and about the right to belong. These topics don't always make headlines, but they profoundly affect people's lives. By talking about them, we keep the momentum for change going. Before we wrap up, I want to thank you, Palesa, for sharing your insights and experiences. Your work and the stories you've brought to us really highlight why this is such a critical human rights issue. To all our listeners, thank you for joining us in this important conversation. Remember, no one should be invisible, and everyone has the right to belong somewhere. Together, we can help ensure that the invisible become visible and that everyone's rights to identity and belonging are upheld.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.